Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Reveille, reveille, donks.
Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
Oh, yeah. You hear that? What you told
me? There's not a day that goes by I don't look like shit.
You're just going to talk during my intro, Luke, okay?
I was hosting.
No, we just agreed that I was because you wanted to admit, you said, do you want the show to be more fun? Then you should host it. That's exactly the conversation that just happened. I said, okay, great. And here we are. Oh, freaking yeah, Luke, we've got mail bags. And that's what we're going to be flaunting today. Happy 4th of July. It's Monday, July 3rd. This is pre-taped. We like to tell you that up front in the sports, space-time continuum here. But you've stumbled upon Morning Combat. And while your other shows are on vacation observing the 4th, we are putting in the work to answer your friggin' questions. You're looking at BC Brian Campbell, one half of this fantastic award-winning duo, Luke Thomas on the other side, Mikey Morms from CBS Sports on the ones and twos. Luke, what do you have to say about the 4th of July? Is this all about freedom and America to you or what?
No, it's about where in the city I'm going to get a view of the fireworks.
Okay.
That is about it.
That's very patriotic of you.
I mean, it's a little bit more than that, but like, you know, I'm not going to do rah-rah stuff.
Luke, is it fair to say that you not fought, but you put in time to help defend this great country at some point in your life? That's safe to
say. I volunteered.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you took money from it, from Uncle Sam. Don't try to act like this was some type of like
only fight. I would not say a princely sum if I could be candid, yeah. But yes, I got paid.
Did Uncle Sam pay for the College of William and Mary or not? That's the key.
No, he did not. So the way it would work is if you want to, okay, I don't know how it is now, but at the time when I enlisted, which was technically 1997, the way that it worked was you could do a 4-year deal. All deals are 8-year deals, which people don't realize. You can do 4 active and then 4 what's called inactive, ready, reserve. There's lots of different ways that you can break it up. But the way I was going to do it was 6 years active, 2 years inactive, ready, reserve, where they could call you up for a wartime obligation if they needed to. And you had to do the 6 to get any money from college if you were a reservist. So you could not do 4 and get money. You had to do 6. So I did 6. And the way I was able to do that and get money was they would give me just enough money. I think it was $250 a month for the months that I was in school. So I would pay for some food. It would pay for books, mostly, not entirely. It would pay for, you know, living things, but that was really about it. It was $250 a month.
Thank you for the itemized receipt on that one, Luke. Yeah. I appreciate it. This isn't Memorial Day or Veterans Day, but happy birthday to this great land. End of patriotism. Luke, we have solicited our fans and viewers to send in their questions for this whole bag right here featuring two males. Let's just randomly hit the skins for the hell of it. Just for the yell of it.
For the smell of it.
Yeah, it smells weird, right? All right, Luke, let's start with @69, Jimmy the Jet 69. How do you like that name, Luke? That's a real name right here.
Dude, these people sign up with like the worst names, like Booty Eater 69. And it's like, yeah. Dude, this is your fucking name, you know?
Luke Thomas, how much better Jimmy the Jet Booty Eater 69 wants to know would McGregor versus Diaz have been for the Ultimate Fighter? Then McGregor, I don't want to say versus Chandler because I don't think we'll ever see that. McGregor and Chandler.
Yeah, dude, there's just, I mean, You know what's funny is the show kind of got started and it helped the enthusiasm for the fight, even though it wasn't made. They were like, all right, they're facing off, you know. And now it seems like they're just two ships passing in the night. Now, I'm not watching BC, but does it seem like there's a lot of, what do you want to call it, on-air chemistry between them? Not much there between them. They don't have much interaction. So the answer is, I think it would be better, but it would be better with Diaz. It would be a lot better with Diaz, but that's not Mike's fault exactly, more than it is just like what Diaz has to offer.
Sure.
And it still wouldn't be great, I don't think, because Connor's kind of checked out from what we can
tell. I only watched 2.5 episodes of the season. I did originally plan to review every episode, but man, did that go out the window quick. I'll say that there wasn't enough Connor, which is crazy because he's like the advertisement for you to tune in. There was a lot of Connor in the post-fight show where they ran a bunch with Dean Thomas and Rashad Evans, and they ran a bunch of Connor bonus clips of him just being out of his mind, challenging the fighters to, like, you know, exercise bike competitions or partying long in the house. But there wasn't enough interaction between the two fighters, trash talking. It wasn't, you know, Dillashaw snake in the grass, Faber versus Connor, and Garbrandt jumps up and gets in the face. It wasn't that, Luke. Maybe it turns into that. Probably not, but I don't know if Connor and Nate would have fixed that anyway. I mean, is that show still alive, Tough Luke, in reality? Like, is it viable? Is it still there? They care about Dana White's Contender Series so much more than Tough in terms of actually using it to create new fighters. This feels like a Dana legacy project that it's still here, if anything, right?
Yeah, I mean, Dana, they had a new, you can't say they didn't have a new idea because they did have a new idea with the Contender Series. Now they've kind of, you know, watered that down too, but okay, they had some new ideas. But, like, you know, remember it took, okay, here's how you can understand, like, why Tough is still around. One, they probably have, like, content obligations to fill in some kind of way. But the other one is this: you remember how long it took for them to stop playing Face the Pain on fucking TV? You know what I mean? Like, well, I think the band wasn't even to get, like, long past the point of the band breaking up. They're still playing this on fucking intros. So after I took a bit of a break from MMA through college and got right back into it around 2002 or so. And, you know, they would play pay-per-views. So I think I can't remember exactly when they started, but around the 30s and 40s. Where they'd have the Roman Gladiator putting on all their fucking gear while Face the Pain is playing and shit. Like, it took them a while before they let go of that song. If they're not going to let go of a song like that, which, like, was so fucking dated and terrible to begin with, obviously, they'll never let go of something like this unless, you know, it's like Charlton Heston with the firearm from his cold, dead hand, boy. That's when you're going to get that that Winchester rifle.
Yeah. Time to end this suffering. I need a minute to myself so I can drift away. It's called Face the Pain by Stem. Thank you. Next question, Luke, is from at Jeremy A. Rodriguez. How often do you have to cleanse your palate of combat sports? As a longtime fan, I find myself often needing a break. So to not turn cynical. Luke, we do this for a living. There's no off season, but burnout is inevitable in anything you pour your heart and soul into, especially when there's BS elements of it, and anything good has a BS silver lining too. What do you do to cleanse the palate outside of disgusting and gross search histories involving BBLs and, like, ball gags?
Self-loathing is a very effective way of dealing with my participation in this absolutely horrendous industry.
No, I'm not asking your morale, you know, your moral code on this. I guess they're saying, you know, so you don't get cynical, do you take a weekend off and watch only movies with the family? Like, is there, there's no off season. I guess we take vacations. They hate when we do that.
Yeah, I definitely try to get some time spaced in between things if I feel like, ugh, I don't want to watch, you know, yet more people getting punched in the head. But I would say in general, it takes a lot for me to get to that point. And also, you know, our job is a little unique. Like, most guys who cover MMA, they really only cover MMA. But because we do boxing, I get to go back and forth. And plus, BC, you know, I've been telling you this, like, because I've got such a gap in my coverage from years where I was, like, editorially responsible at MMA fighting, I've had to, like, play catch up on the boxing side. So I spend a lot of time watching, like, you watch 90s NBA highlights. I watch 90s boxing, basically, to pick, and then early 2000s, like, stuff that I missed. So it takes a while for me to get there, but yes, but all of us get there eventually, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, switching sport. I mean, what I love, to be fair, what I love most about this show is it's really stupid, but also, you know, it's not just about combat sports. We are able to spin off and do some bullshit and mix it up. And I think that's what the people like too. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, 75% of our audience really are MMA P1s who come from your fan base that are like, enough BC, enough dick jokes, enough all that shit. I want you to preview every UFC fight on the card, and I want you to review every UFC fight on the card. But separate from those folks, Luke, I think our show allows me a little constant weaving because we're doing MK homework here. We're, you know, joking about this here, but who cares? Nobody's really watching this for
me. BC, our show, if we were like on WFAN in New York, we could do noon to three. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Even with combat, well, they wouldn't let, New York would never let you have a combat sports focus, not terrestrial radio anyway, but we could do it. Like, we could do 3 hours every single day, like, no sweat. I'm 100% sure about it.
MK all day, nearly every single day. Let's go over to at Fresh Prince of No Hair 9703. So he's a bald bastard, this guy. Luke, how do you see a fight between Topuria and Sterling playing out? Aljo is obviously still at bantamweight, but he just announced yesterday, I believe, as we record this, that he plans to move up after the O'Malley fight to 145. So they are very likely to face each other, says the Fresh Prince of No Hair, eventually. How do you see that fight breaking out?
It's a good question. I've not thought that one through, but so I can only give you initial impressions. So let me think this through. Obviously, you'd have Aljo moving up a weight class, which creates some unknowns about how he might perform there, even generally, irrespective of Topuria as a specific opponent. So that creates a little bit of hesitancy to be too sure about anything. So you can imagine what he would want to do. He's going to want to same thing at bantamweight. He's going to want to box on the outside. He's going to want to find the back. The question is, like, what does his strength look like against 145ers? Also, remember what Topuria did to Bryce Mitchell. Like, he is not just a strong guy. He's a very strong grappler, both technically and physically, right?
Ryan Hall. Look what he did to Ryan Hall.
Right, Ryan Hall. And then on the feet. Now, here's the thing. I don't know. It's actually a good question. So let me see. So if I recall correctly, speaking of Buddha Eater 69, Ilya Topuria has a 69-inch reach. So let me see right now on the air. What exactly would the reach be of Aljamain Sterling? Because I don't know it offhand. Funnily enough, BC, 71 inches. So that would continue the trend, which is a 100% in place of Topuria having a reach disadvantage to all of his opponents. Yeah. So you could see there'd be some issues there, maybe some takedown. Like, what would the defense look like for Topuria? I think, though, he's too skilled, too strong to really succumb to being submitted. And I think it's a tough fight for Sterling, but it would be an interesting one, BC.
Yeah, indeed. I'd love it. I think you could put Topuria, you could put any featherweight in there. The conversation is, what would Aljo look like at a division above? Luckily for him, he's big, he's long, he relies heavily on his ground game. I don't think, you know, that change. I think will he be the same fighter, Luke? I mean, you could argue the competition will get tougher at a higher weight class, but I wonder if he's the same elite fighter in both divisions. I know a lot of people are going to be like, hold on, let me see him at 145 against these killers and heavy hitters, but he's not there to be hit necessarily either. He's a smart fighter who leans into his strengths.
Yes, that's true. And also, there's a lot of good grapplers at 145. You mentioned Ryan Hall. How about Brian Ortega? He's at 145 as well. Volkanovski, you know, seems to be skilled, at least defensively anyway, in that regard. So, you know, that's a tough up. I mean, listen, going up a weight class for any champion is going to be difficult. That's a tough climb from 135 to 145. You know?
Let me improv a freestyle question from at BC Booty Eater Campbell. 69 and a half, Luke. BC has a huge man crush on Brian Ortega, it seems. But Luke Thomas, what is your honest take? And this is me making up this question right now because I'm interested in Brian Ortega right now as a viable 145 contender. Where is he actually at in your mind? I can't look at it tangibly because there's too much romance there. I love the guy. And plus, I believe in his ability to find his UBL at any point in a fight. He's always a threat to win it out of nowhere. How good is he actually right now in your eyes?
Very skilled, obviously. But for me, dude, there's a bit of a ceiling on what we've seen. Now, again, the fight with Yair ended way too quickly to draw any very broad declarations about his improvement. And obviously, he looked really good against Korean Zombie. And you know, he is, like, I mean, here's the thing. he is very spirited as a competitor. His jiu-jitsu is always going to put him in fights. Again, I go back to the Hanato Moicano fight. Moicano was fucking him up until he just wasn't. And that's that kind of thing that Brian Ortega can do. He did it in the Clay Guida fight as well. Like, because of that, and because what you saw Volkanovski have to go through, you know, in that sense, BC, you cannot count him out. That being said, I think he took a lot of beatings in his career that he didn't need to take. I think between that and some injury time off, it has really hurt his development. So as skilled as he is and as dangerous, I mean, his jiu-jitsu is truly dangerous. It's not just a thing he's good at. It's explicitly really, really, you have to be very careful with it. So that's interesting, but the striking and everything else just looks to me like it's respectable, but not championship.
Well, the striking is respectable. It's just that his striking defense is just non-existent.
That's part of striking. I mean, that's
fair.
People want to separate them. Like your position and how you move through punches. This your defense needs to be woven into your offense, not one or the other.
Too willing to show where he comes from, which is toughness, background, and lean on that chin. But I think his will is stronger than his body's resistance is, and you saw that against Max Holloway. You just can't take that type of punishment. You just can't. You just freaking can't, Josh Emmett. You can't. Thank you. That was my editorial for the day. Let's go over to a question, Luke, from at Rustic Tribe Designs 3042.
Oh, I love those guys. Hey, yeah, Rustic Tribe Designs right there.
They have created us some awesome things. They're still threatening to create us a room service diaries table, Luke, filled with MK artifacts. I mean, these guys rule. Here's the question. Luke, how many times are you going to watch the Arnold Schwarzenegger doc on Netflix? And they have a question for me. But let's hear your answer first, Luke.
I got through about one episode and kind of checked out. Here's the problem. And this is why like Pumping Iron is so different. Pumping Iron obviously is a very different kind of documentary in so many ways. But BC, I don't know what your appetite is. I just, even for figures of adoration like Schwarzenegger, and I've got multiple Schwarzenegger things all around this room for fuck's sake, right? I have a hard time watching documentaries where the person being documented has say over the content.
Yeah.
I can't do it. It's the same thing.
Except
with Conor
for the
McGregor
last stand with Michael Jordan. He had full say and it was awesome. All right.
Okay. But I mean, he let it fly there a little bit. And I watched the one with Schwarzenegger. It was interesting. But even then, like, for example, like one thing that was really disappointing from him in the first episode where he addresses steroid use and he admits it. He's like, we definitely were all using, which is true. Like, of course, they were all using. And he was like, it's responsible for about like 5% of my success.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, it's probably a little more than that, right? It's probably a little more than that. And I think you should be honest about that. So like shit like that, you know what I mean? Where if someone else was covering him and trying to do an honest job, but getting a more, you know, a less curated look, I think that would be a little bit more interesting for me. Cause I'm not, I obviously think highly of the guy, but like, I'm also interested in his failures too. And like his downsides and like the complexity of him as a man, you know?
You know that movie he did where he gave birth, that one, Junior? Yeah, I'll never watch that, Luke.
You know, I've actually never seen that one.
Yeah, it didn't interest me, all right? I'm not trying to give birth. I give birth three times a day after each meal, Luke, and it's not pretty to watch, okay? Yeah, if you know what I mean. The other question from Rustic Tribe Design was, Brian, what's your favorite music documentary? Great question. I don't know that I have a go-to, but I watch them all the time, endlessly. I will say my favorites that stand out. Luke, have you ever seen the Eagles documentary that originally debuted on Showtime and was 3 hours long? Have you ever seen that one?
I mean, is that a serious question? You think I give a fuck about whether Don Henley lives or dies?
I like the Eagles. I'm not a huge fan, though, but it's just so well done and thorough that I love it. There is a fantastic Jaco Pastorius documentary that just came out that was paid for by Robert Trujillo, Luke, who is what? Is he the bassist for Metallica still?
What's the bassist for Metallica, yeah.
Yeah, he kind of paid for this and produced it, and it's just incredible. The Jeff Beck one was fantastic. That was on Showtime a few years ago.
Did you watch the Showtime Wu-Tang one?
I have not seen that yet. Should I get on that?
It's pretty good, actually. Yeah, okay. Actually, that one I really did like. That one, they did that one well, yeah.
There is also a David Crosby one that Cameron Crowe put out a couple years ago that is, you talk about honest. It's so honest about Crosby's failures as a man, along with his musical brilliance, that anyone in that likes that realm of music, don't miss that one. many other ones though. I love a good doc. I see, look, I've always loved, you know, nonfiction more than stories, you know.
Don't dude, tell that's me my I'm like, dude, the world is so endless. I mean, this is you should know that this is a weakness of us, like,
yes,
this character of men, like the fact that we don't like seek out fiction more beyond the superficial, like, hey, I'm gonna go watch fucking Avengers, you know.
Yeah.
But like, it's true. Like I keep like, for all these books, I'm like, you know, every time I buy a new book, it's always a nonfiction book, because there's always one I want to put in circulation, because I find the world itself like so fascinating. But it is shitty that we don't read fiction, to be quite candid.
You can't make me. Although I am reading Dune right now, Luke, because I'm so fired up for the second Dune movie coming out. Are you? That's all I talk about my house. And are you into that?
You mean
Dune,
poor man Star Wars?
No. Original Star Wars, right? That's what George Lucas stole. He stole.
If anything, Star Wars is a poor man's Dune. But
indeed. But don't watch the 1984 hilariously ridiculous one. Watch the what's the guy's name? Denis Villeneuve. Is that the guy's name? The director. That's just so brilliant. This is probably a conversation for me and Web Scream, not me and Luke Thomas. But you better watch it in theaters. Dune 2, will you?
Yeah, I'll see that in theaters. Yeah.
Okay. You would you agree that while you won't do a full mast 5 stars like I will on Dune 1 as arguably like a top 3 movie I've ever seen, you'll say, well, what will you say about it? That it's great or that it's very good?
I liked the first Dune a lot. Yeah. I thought it was very, very good. I enjoyed it. Sure.
Okay. Okay. There you go. There you go, Luke. Let's go over to at Kaylin R. Zavala. Could be a lady, Luke. How do you see Tatiana Suarez versus Erin Blanchfield if they fought at 125? Now, to be fair, Suarez is climbing the ladder at 115 now after returning at flyweight. Luke, who would win that fight?
I don't know. That's a fucking amazing fight, and I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, Suarez has, in theory, should have the better wrestling, right? But that remains to be seen, dude. Erin Blanchfield is terrifying. It really would. I mean, here's the thing, BC, like a fight like, so for example, we've seen good wrestling defensively and offensively from Erin Blanchfield. I'd say much more on the offensive end, but that's not her fault, right? So I think that, you know, she would be a hell of a force, but the question is not like, would she be a worthy opponent up front? The question is, like, by the deep second round, maybe heading into the third, what does the wrestling look like then, right? When you've used all of your tricks and now it's a little bit more about just kind of core fundamentals and who kind of wants it more in those grinding moments. I don't have any doubt about her commitment, but like the depth of knowledge and sort of wrestling sensibility that Tatiana Suarez has, how would that equate? What would that look like deep into a fight where the margin between them is thin but can break? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. That's why, I mean, you know, we do okay bet. We have no fucking idea what we're doing. But this is really one of those fights where, like, honestly, I don't really have a clear sense about what it would look like.
I mean, it would come down to striking probably. So, I mean, I don't know. Tatiana Suarez's striking didn't look insanely great in that comeback. It was more just about the deliberate wrestling and takedowns to get the job done. But can you take Blanchfield down and control her there? And if not, what does that boxing match look like? I'm not really sure. I'd love to see it, though. Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, Tatiana is going to wear a UFC title. Are you prepared for that?
Sure. Sure. Okay. I mean, she should have had one a while ago, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah. You're damn right about that. This is from at Zeljaish. I butchered that guy's name, but whatever. Luke, what is your dream vacation right now? What's the one that you're like, damn, we got to do that. We have to do that one day. We have to.
So there's probably two different ones. There's two ones that my wife and I have talked about as like the dream one. Yeah. I think one would be a tour between Seoul, South Korea, Tokyo, Japan, and maybe like other parts within Japan, maybe even Australia, like something like that, you know? That would be one, to see those places, but with a particular focus on Japan and Korea. The other one, which is a little bit more doable, has been one on my list. My wife has been to a number of places in South America, but she's never been to Argentina, which I find a little bit surprising, but it's pretty far. My understanding is from Bogota to Buenos Aires is like, I think 8 or 9 hours, maybe 9, maybe even 10, something like that. So it's far. It takes a while to get there. I would love to go to Argentina, dude. I mean, you can get close to the South Pole. You can get pretty far. There's obviously coastline there. I mean, the food, forget about it. And dude, from what I hear, Argentina, especially if you have American dollars, is dirt cheap, like super affordable. In fact, there was an article about Americans just like posting up there on these digital, nomad visas, getting like plush real estate for like $600 a month in downtown Buenos Aires. Like, yeah. You just can't believe it. Easily, anyone could afford that shit.
Doesn't that explain why Maidana never fought again after the two Floyd pay-per-views?
I mean, why would you, bro? How much you think he made off those two pay-per-views? Like 15 million?
I would say he made $4 million in the first one because that was about what Floyd was offering opponents. And for the rematch, he probably made $6 million.
Okay, so 10 plus some sponsors. Who knows? Let's say 10 or 11 million. Dude, 10 or 11 million in Argentina is going to go far. So yeah, God bless him, dude. He made some money and beat up Floyd a little bit and got out. Like, dude, that's a winning as far as I'm concerned.
Is Argentina the Europe of South America, Luke?
It is a little bit from what I understand, like if you just look at the architecture and like who obviously immigrated there from Europe, which is, direct descendants to obviously a lot of Germans are there, but plenty more other ones. Italians are obviously a huge part of it. And they do speak Spanish, but they have a very unique accent and their food is very different. And they kind of see themselves, they don't see themselves as like closer to Bolivians than they are the Spanish or the Italian, I suppose. From what I understand anyway.
So I love that you said your dream trip is, or at least you mentioned Tokyo along with Korea. Tokyo is my dream trip. And, my wife and kids don't want to go. I want to go so bad. What? Luke. Maybe I need Mark Raimondi to take me and we can go eat at steakhouses that wrestlers frequented back in the day. But Mikey, our producer, said he went to Japan when he was a POS 12-year-old who didn't eat fish and he had a miserable time, but would love to go back. Luke, are you surprised by that revelation based on the fact that we left that steakhouse in London and Mikey's like, hold on, I got to stop at Burger King on the way back.
He's like, hold on, I got to go to motherfucking BK, son. What you know about that?
Yeah, there you go.
And I was wow, you really are a peasant.
My nature-based one is Banff National Park outside of Calgary. Luke, are you aware of the Blue Canadian Rockies and the?
I'm not.
Okay, well that's where I want to go, right? Or Jasper National Park, not too far from there. That crisp blue water and it's gonna change my life. Thank you. Hey, let's hear from @MatthewThomas970.
That's Spence not Crawford, my brother.
This could be your brother. Yeah, is he born in 1970? Your brother.
No.
Okay, this might not be him. With Spence Crawford coming up, do you guys ever see a scenario in the future where most or all divisions in the sport have one champion holding all four belts? And if so, how big of a deal would that be towards boxing becoming more easy for casuals or newbies? I mean, it would fix everything. That's the dream, right? Like when boxing was boxing, quote unquote, you had 8 divisions, 70 years ago. And eventually a second recognized title popped up, but for the most part it was every division had one face, one name, one champion. Even though, Luke Thomas, we are in a better, optimistically fun era at the moment where we're getting a lot of unification and undisputed championships, where we're going to have one face after Spence Crawford, who's the best welterweight in the world. If Usyk and Fury finally fight, we're going to have one name, one face. The idea that all 17 of boxing's divisions could get there and have a reigning and defending undisputed champion is absurdly not realistic. And the main reason, in my opinion, is because the four sanctioning bodies, who are all regularly under question from boxing hardcores based on their practices and decision-making, they wouldn't want that. I'm surprised we had as many undisputed opportunities right now. And the reason why is because in prior years, sanctioning bodies made that really hard. They'd force you to defend mandatories or give up the belt despite a big fight on the horizon, because they want you to be active with their belt, because every time you fight with the, let's say, WBC title, you have to pay them a big percentage of your salary. And that's why Errol Spence Jr. kind of railed against them at the end of the Spencer Crawford Spence presser. And I don't know if you saw, Luke, Mauricio Sulaiman Jr., the head of the WBC, responded to that by publishing an article on their website, supposedly about where all that money goes. The only problem is the article didn't actually mention where all that money goes, but we have seen people rail against the sanctioning bodies in the past. Both Canelo and Floyd both gave up titles ahead of big ones, so they didn't have to pay that sanctioning fee. But no, I don't ever see a scenario where we have one recognized champion. And the reason is because boxing is broken. There's too many people at the table that are surviving by getting their piece of the pie, and they will dig in and fight for that piece of the pie unless some type of central governing body was created. That feels like a pipe dream for boxing. It's not going to happen.
No, anything that happens to boxing good is accidental.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes the sanctioning bodies, like they're doing right now, they're getting out of each other's way to make these big fights. But will that become a long-term trend? No. They don't want one champion with all four belts fighting twice a year.
You see, this is why I've never enjoyed nice things. It's because I always know this is going to come with the other end before too long. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can eat a lot of great food, but eventually you're going to have to shit, Luke, right? That's what you're saying.
There's a lot of defecation talk going on from that side. Well, actually, I should say this side of the screen there, huh?
Yeah,
a lot of talk about.
Maybe my haters are right, Luke. My comedy bits are down to like three categories. It's all I've got left, Luke. Okay. Straw weights, dicks, and shit. Okay, there you go.
And yeah, skits and bits. Don't forget skits and bits. That's a key staple.
Hey, did you see the guy from Portugal? The man did a Reddit AMA and he got bombarded by skits and bits, Luke. But I think he kind of called it on himself. Are you not aware of this?
I'm not aware of this.
All right. Another topic for another day. Let's go over to. At Jesse Brooks 9612, two-part question. Who would you guys take in a rematch between Volk and Islam? Let's start there, Luke. Do you have who would you favor based on how close that first fight was if they rematched at 55?
I know the inclination is to say Volk, but I feel like Makhachev would adjust too. Everyone's been like, oh, Volk would just tighten up this and fix that. And he would. That's true. I just feel like Islam would go. He'd be like, oh, well, he couldn't go to those in the fight. That's true. But that's just that moment. Now with the ability to reflect and train and come up with new stuff, which I'm sure he has, I think would be able to get around that. In other words, like, I don't think the difference between Volk and Islam is in any way great. And again, I understand the arguments. I don't think they're strong, but I understand the arguments for saying he won three rounds the first time. It's not to say it's out of the realm of possibility, BC, but I feel like folks are sleeping on this. Folks love sleeping on Islam. I don't quite get it. Even after he beat Charles Oliveira the way he did, you know, we're still here doing this shit. Like, okay, all right, I guess.
Yeah, I would favor Islam. I would also expect him to win, but, you know, you'd expect it to be a close fight. I mean, I didn't ever thought Volk would come in and wrestle the way he did, you know, and stop the takedowns the way he did at times. It was incredible. The second part of the question from Jesse Brooks is, do you guys think Shavkat could beat Leon Edwards right now?
Yes, but I don't know how likely that is. In other words, I could see a fight where Rachmanov is able to play off the clinch and then into grappling positions and do well there. But Leon's movement is great. His takedown defense is great. You know, his strike selection is really superb, obviously. I think he could beat Leon. Like, I don't think the gap between them is so big that that's impossible. But I would favor Leon to win. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, isn't Shavkat coming off a performance in which he looked a little human? Can you rack my brain for me?
Yeah, he fought Jeff Neal.
That's right. It's part of the process. Yeah, you know what, Luke? Strength versus strength. I mean, I guess they're asking if they fought right now, but I guess I'm saying, you know, what if they fought in a year? I'd favor Shavkat to win. Is that crazy?
Yeah, today I give it to Edwards. In a year, it's much harder to say.
Yeah, right now, it's tough to say. And Edwards is operating right now at a very high level in the middle of that top 10.
People were like, oh, Kamaru slowed down in the second fight. Okay, a little. All right, fine. I'm not going to say that's not true. It's true. But get the fuck out of here with this. Like, I have been a skeptic of Leon Edwards. Not that I didn't know he was good. I knew he was good, but I didn't think he was championship good. And for the most part, in the first fight, he really wasn't. But then, dude, in the second fight, like, Kamaru didn't fall off a cliff. He got a little bit older, somewhat noticeable. That was a just a masterful performance by a guy who brought all the forces of his game together to really shine. Like, it just, I mean, of all the times to doubt Leon Edwards, after the second Kamaru fight is truly the worst time you could pick.
What about if, I mean, like, because Kamaru can't wrestle the same amount he could, like, back in the Woodley days, right? When he was coming up to for the title. He can't.
Sure, he did. He was just fighting lesser competition trying to move up.
I mean, but he was wrestling exclusively in those times for the most part and ground and pounding. Then with Trevor Whitman, his striking came around, and then it looked like for a bit he was leaning too hard on the striking. And now at his advanced age, Luke, I'm wondering if he actually can pull off a full wrestling based attack over 25 minutes. I mean, who can? Even Habib, right. Even Habib had to slow down against Iaquinta in the last two rounds, right?
Eddie Alvarez once told me, and I think, you know, this is, not a hardcore truth, but probably a pretty truthful way of looking at it, which is he goes, Luke, you can, in a 5-round fight, you can wrestle max 3 rounds. So you got to figure out what you're going to do with the other 10. And I was like, that's probably a pretty good way of looking at it. You know, he didn't mean like you were only going to wrestle the first 3 and strike the last 2. He just meant you got about a good 15 minutes of hardcore wrestling. After that, you got to figure it out, you know.
I like when he says your name before saying that. It adds like poignancy to it, Luke. Like he respects you. Like, Luke,
I remember he did it on air, and it kind of like was sort of an interesting way of saying it, you know?
Yeah. Let's go over to @115thDream9. Is that a combination of John Lennon and Bob Dylan songs put into one title? I don't know. Can you please do an RSD with Ty Tuivasa? That would be the best episode ever. And I'm curious, what questions would you ask him? Luke?
I mean,
it'd be great. I mean, it'd be great.
Why would you bother with any of that? Like, I guess I would ask him a little bit about growing up, the particulars of how he grew up. But mostly I'm going to be like, how many beers have you had in one night? How many times have you shit yourself? You know,
I want to know about the excess. That's what I want to know about. Yeah. There's no question.
So how many times, like in BC's description, Big John, how many times have you just destroyed a commode in Tokyo?
You know, I'd love to know about bar fights. You know, that guy's gotten into a ton of them too, right?
Dude, how many times have somebody broken things? Someone's broken shit over his head and then regretted it. You know, he looks like that kind of guy.
At Landon Bolin 136, who will be champion at bantamweight by the start of 2024?
Jesus, who the hell knows? Okay, so let's think about this through. It's August. If Sterling wins, he's not fighting again this year, right? Like, the guy is already fighting on an expedited timeline. Now, I'm not saying that they wouldn't introduce a interim title just to fuck with him, but in terms of him, if he wins, it would be like he's not going to fight again, right? There's just no way.
Well, he's not going to fight at bantamweight again, according to his words, if win or lose.
No matter what?
That's what he said yesterday, I believe. Now, if he loses, does that change things? I don't know. I mean, Marab's still there, and that seems to be the reason. Lucas, does Sterling have a really hard cut at bantamweight or a regular hard cut?
I think he's got pretty tough one. I mean, he makes it because he's that good or whatever, but I think it's pretty tough.
It could be win or lose the titles. You know, I mean, if O'Malley beats him, O'Malley's the new champion, but we got three big fights in the title picture coming up. What's your best guess of who starts the new year with the belt?
At 135?
Yeah. So I guess we're saying that either O'Malley would defend, let's say December, and that would decide it if he wins, or there would be a vacant fight at the end of the year.
Dude, would O'Malley defend it 4 months later? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. You're right.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing the UFC is doing that I think is kind of like confusing people a little bit, or like tricking them. I mean, I'm not saying they're trying to trick, but like the point I might make is like, we on this show, for example, we'll be like, oh, look at all these fights they announced. But like, they're just spreading that over like a wide like net. It's not, they're not all concentrated on the same ones. Now, sometimes they are, but a lot of times they're spread out. So it's like, I feel like if I don't know, 4 months just seems like a really doable turn. We've seen turnarounds much shorter than that one, even for championship fights. But if you don't have to, why would you? You know?
Yeah, you're right. I think the better question, based on the timing issue, in my opinion, would be next summer, 1 year from now, who's the bantamweight champion? That's the better question, Luke, because on that point, Sterling's way gone, win or lose. And I might say Marab. Really, I might say Marab.
Yeah, still don't know. Probably in that case. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Cejudo's got what? Cheeto coming up. Sanhagen's got who? Look.
He's got Umar. Umar.
Oh, fuck. Umar. God, it could be Umar by that point, for all we know. Damn. Yeah, all right.
Those are two very, very tough fights. Two very tough fights. Very tough guys.
Let's hear from @screwyou_. The end of that name, Luke. Really
I
nice.
Do it a lot.
Yeah.
I do it a lot.
Wow, that's pretty gross. Another fantasy matchup question about boxing for BC. Yes. If there was a super series created with each fighter meeting another one with the likes of Bernard Hopkins, Triple G, Marvin Hagler, Ray Leonard, Canelo, Sergio Martinez, Thomas Hearns, and Kelly Pavlik, who would go on to win it? Now, I guess we're saying if these were all the middleweight versions of themselves. And furthermore, would anyone out of the eight go undefeated in these matchups? So, Luke, let's say we have a mythical middleweight tournament. B-Hop, Golovkin, Hagler, Leonard, Canelo, Sergio Martinez, Thomas the Hitman Hearns, Kelly Pavlik. I mean, this is basically a question.
I mean, what is Kelly Pavlik doing in there? Let's be honest.
I mean, I love Kelly Pavlik. That Jermaine Taylor, the first fight was amazing.
I'm not saying he wasn't a good boxer, but I mean, we're talking about Hagler and Canelo. Pavlik, yeah. You know, this is a separate conversation.
All right, who's the favorite? It's Hagler, right? He did lose at
Hagler is my guy, 100%.
He did lose at middleweight to Ray Leonard, who is also in this conversation.
Very controversial.
Could Ray Leonard do that twice or three times? I don't know. Hagler's the best middleweight of all time, in my estimation. I do think Triple G came close for a while there, Luke. You know, he tied the record for middleweight defenses with 20. I mean, Triple G is peak Triple G is a problem for every person that ever walked on this planet.
Big drama show.
But Hagler can switch stances. He can box as well as he can fight. And he has a chin and a backbone and a will like few in history. I'm thinking Hagler comes out of this tournament. I don't know if anyone goes unbeaten. Now, I guess he's saying this would be a double elimination super. Okay, so remember the Showtime Super 6 Super Middleweight Tournament, Luke, that Andre Ward won? You were allowed losses in that. That was a round robin tournament. And then I guess the guys with the best records fought each other in the finals. If I'm correctly recalling, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there was a semifinals in there. Under this scenario, I like Hagler to win this tournament. But does he go undefeated in your eyes? On any given day, could Hopkins, Triple G, Canelo, you know, Tommy Hearns was a great middleweight.
Listen, the story in my mind of the Leonard fight, I know a lot of people scored for Leonard. That's fine. I don't. I scored for Hagler. And so in a world where that has already happened, of course he could lose. I mean, I think he wins that, but he doesn't like dominate everyone. You know, those are competitive close fights in a few different directions. So no, I don't think you can say that.
What about the Canelo from 2019? Now, granted that was at 168, but that guy who was so efficient walking down and destroying Billy Joe Saunders and Caleb Plant and Callum Smith, what does that guy do against Hagler? Is he in the fight, Luke? I mean, I think he gets outworked.
I think he gets outworked.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Hagler's chin is insane. It is just insane. Love that question.
Canelo does that shit. Canelo goes and fights and flurries and then takes a little bit of time and then goes and, you know, throws a combo and takes some time. I think Hagler would be just on you.
Yeah. Yeah. It just takes some time. Is that Jimmy Eat World, Luke?
Jimmy Eat World. Boy, that was a 90s high school radio fucking jam all the time.
Yeah, I bet you Jimmy ate ass too, Luke. I mean, let's just keep that trend going. All right, there you go. Let's go over to @SkiSonic. When I ran track, the boxers in which I won my first race against henceforth became my quote lucky drawers. Oh, he's talking about, oh, sorry, Luke. He's talking about the underwear, not the physical boxers.
Yeah, I don't need to know this. You can actually stop this question here.
Have you ever owned a so-called lucky garment or trinket? How did it become imbued with such power? I didn't win any races after that for the record, and running track in boxers sucks. Yeah, first of all, don't run track in boxer shorts. Luke, have you ever had a piece of clothing that you referred to as your lucky blank or that you felt gave you superpower or luck?
Do I look like a man who is just swimming in an ocean of luck? Based on what you know about me, would you say that luck has been a companion? I mean, yes, of course, in some ways it has, but no, I don't have these are my lucky shoelaces. No way. Hard work, grit, determination, fuckface. I mean, those are the backbones of success.
Okay. Once again, Luke, just like the MK curse, people aren't being like fully literal. Like it's more of a mental thing. You have something that happened to have
given you some success. It's a mental crutch. Yes. I don't need that or organized religion. I'm good to go, friend.
Oh, wow. Well, you'll find out what you need at the end of the life, Luke. Hopefully I'll be there to pull you out of the ditch. We'll tell you, I had from 1998 to about 2002, I had a lucky orange sweater. It was just a regular wool sweater, Luke. But I overachieved in college hookups with that sweater. And I mean, one time at Seton Hall, there was a Jennifer Love Hewitt dead ringer, Luke. And, you know, remember we talked about fumbling on the goal line? You know, I was in position to win, Luke. And of course, I botched it horrendously. But that lucky orange sweater, I even wore it to New York City in 2001 when I tried out for the ESPN sports trivia game show 2 Minute Drill, of which I appeared on and won the tryout, Luke, wearing the lucky orange sweater. Now I tried to wear the lucky orange sweater to my actual episode that was filmed, but at the last minute they're like, no, you can't wear that bright orange thing. And they went out and got me like a suit jacket and a shirt to put on. But
and you lost like a bitch.
Well, that's a story for another day. If I can get a working VCR, I can produce the video of me on ESPN's 2 Minute Drill, Luke. We could do MK.
Could you really? I would fucking love. I mean, it's pretty cool. I would love to see that.
Yeah. It was like a one-on-one trivia show. You remember that show with Kenny Mayne as the host?
I remember the name and I remember all these kinds of shows, but I couldn't tell you. I remember the only one I really remember was Stump the Schwab.
Yeah, that was Stump this was after was, that. This was before.
This is kind of this, for folks who don't know what Stump the Schwab is. Schwab was this big fat loser nerd who was kind of like ChatGPT.
You got like the head researcher at ESPN. Yeah. He was
probably a nice guy. I'm being a dick, you know.
All right. I missed Mikey. Mikey wanted to know if Marab versus Cejudo would become the new title fight if Aljo vacates. Well, Cejudo's got to beat Cheeto.
Cheeto, right. I mean, yeah, if he beats Cheeto, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Luke, that lucky orange sweater, by the way, many hookups in that thing. Many hookups in it, Luke. Is that why I have an orange
car? Does that mean you like practicing with autoerotic asphyxiation in the back of a 7-Eleven parking lot?
Is that why I have an orange car and an orange wallet today, Luke?
Okay. Yes.
I wore orange flip-flops to drop off my son this morning, Luke. I'm telling you, it's the luck continues. Let's go over to at El Dorito 4014. Do you think McGregor's next fight does less than 1 million pay-per-view buys? Ooh. He's been out of the game for a long time with lots of controversy, Twitter rambles, and no one being interested in Tough. It seems like fans and casuals are a bit sick of Conor. With the rise of illegal streaming, I can only see him doing 800,000-ish. That is a good question in the current landscape. But let's remember, Tank versus Ryan Garcia just did what? 1.2 million, and it was a big win. And that fight 7 years ago probably would have done, you know, 1.5 million, 1.6 or 1.7 million. What does Conor versus Chandler do on pay-per-view in February, Luke? Tell me the truth here.
I don't think it's in any way a get. I'll say this. It's 100% not a given that it does 1 million. Like, no chance. I don't think he is. It's like the public awareness of him has not gone down, BC. So in that sense, his fame hasn't waned. But the appetite for it, while still clearly very high, it's just, you know, people were enamored with Conor, you know, with this sort of feverish kind of thing for a while. We're past that a little bit. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. He's still a huge star. It would do big numbers. Of course, it's also opponent dependent. So you're asking about Chandler. What do you say, BC? I would say between 5 and 750, something like that.
Yeah. Now, he has fought in the streaming era for sure, Luke. That cowboy comeback, I'm looking at Wikipedia right now, which was in 2020, did 1.35 estimated pay-per-view.
Yeah, but that was what? Fresh back from, I mean, that was the first fight back from the Mayweather fight.
I'm just trying to set the stage here. The second Poirier fight from 2021 in January reportedly, based on estimations, did 1.5 million. And according to Wikipedia, Luke, I don't know if this is true. They're saying
I don't know where these numbers, Jose, who's sourcing these numbers?
Let me click on the thing here.
Yeah.
This was MMA Junkie. Was an estimation on the 1.5 for McGregor-Poirier 2. McGregor-Poirier 3, July of 21.
We were there.
According to this, it's saying 1.8 million.
No, fuck
that's
no.
That's MMA, and they're referencing an MMA Junkie story on
send me that story. I don't believe that. There's no chance it did that.
Yeah, I'll send it to you on our free time. But look, Connor has fought in the streaming era, though, right? He already has.
Yes. Yes.
But the question, I think the spirit of this question really is, how much has the losing mixed with the bad headlines, mixed with this current state now where it's like, is he just strung out on drugs and not trying? Is he on roids and that's why he's not coming back? Like, what the hell is going on? That has to contribute to a decline of some degree. But 800 to 900, if it's promoted right, still feels right. But
yeah,
will it be promoted right?
Again, UFC doesn't Connor's not so washed he couldn't do big numbers. That's not what I'm saying at all. But like, I mean, dude, like the flame on this fight, it's not extinguished, but it is. I mean, it is flickering, right? It's flickering.
But I mean, they don't do press tours anymore, Luke. Right? They don't do like the kind of things they used to. They don't need to.
Pay per view is still important, but it's not what it once was. They just don't need to. This is what I mean. It's like, dude, no one's kicking them in the ass to make them do extra shit. And so it's like, I'm getting slap fucking emails from the PR people. It's like, this is what you're spending your time doing. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. We got two more questions here, Luke. This is good time, right? Good time, great oldies.
No. Chickadee bang bang.
This is from at Johnny138.
What's your number one search query on pornography sites? What's your number one search query?
Sorry, Luke. Johnny138138 has a question. Hey, Donks, in the spirit of holiday and celebration of the greatest country on earth, would love for each of you to create a concert of 4 to 5 bands or solo acts, living or dead, to create the greatest concert of all time. Can only imagine the garbage BC will be picking. Mine would include, according to Johnny here, Elvis as the headliner, Robert Johnson, and Beethoven below him. Thanks for all the content.
Who the fuck wants to go to that?
And Luke, rip a mean vape hit for your day one, Donks. Johnny from Tampa. Luke will vape when he wants to, first of all. Johnny.
Yeah, I don't have my vape, my marijuana vape on me.
Isn't there a super concert going around right now with like GNR, Metallica, and all these other people on the same card? Did I make that up? Did I see that on social media?
Well, GNR used to tour with Metallica. No, I think it's Metallica and somebody else. But Metallica's doing some stuff with Pantera, I know. When I'm seeing Pantera in September, it's just they're headlining, so it's not that. But
I mean, the living or dead part I hate, because then you're like, okay, the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Miles Davis, like, you know, you can go crazy with it.
Yeah, but it's Luke, like, you can't ask a question like that, like, who is this for? Like, you know, the biggest audience. But like, you can't just assemble random shit like that. There has to be.
Let me ask you
even
this.
Even Jose, we lived through, what was the big one? Feed the World in the 80s, like Live Aid. Remember Live Aid?
Yeah, Live Aid.
Even then, that was the unifying force. There was a message behind it. There was something there. You need something to kind of anchor it all. Otherwise, it's just disparate acts. It doesn't mean.
All right. How about the anchor is a festival? And what I mean by that is, you know, 10, 15 years ago, Luke, I attended Bonnaroo and Austin City Limits Festival, and they're awesome, right? And you either camp there or you get a hotel and all that, and you can't wait to see the lineup, right? And it's usually like, you know, are the top 5 or 6 bands, you know, is there at least 3 or 4 that would foot you there? Let's say they create some new Coachella tomorrow and they say, Luke Thomas, for your own musical taste, give me 4 acts to headline it. What would be the thing that would get you out of your seat, standing front row in a crowd of 90,000 people in front of a stage? What 4 bands right now that are living that could do this? Okay. I'm not talking about a Beatles reunion. I'm talking about right now. Who are you picking?
Mighty, mighty Boss Tones.
Yeah, right. You're like Jedi Mind Tricks, Vinny Paz, Cannibal Corpse. There you go, right?
Dude, I don't think of music in these ways. I know that you're like, I don't know how to explain this to you. Like, I don't have a relationship with my music I enjoy in any kind of public way. It's strictly a personal, like, you know how, like, part of like the Protestant I don't know if it came from the Protestant Reformation, but part of religious reformation in this country was that initially it was believed that only clergy could be your guiding force to God. And then eventually it was clear to them that you could have a personal relationship and you did not need the intermediary, although it served other functions. It's sort of like that with me. Like, when I think about like the task of who would you put up for 90,000 other people, I'm like, I don't think about 9 other people, much less 90. That's not the way in which I interpret this. This is like what it does to me, for me, in my life, in a very personal way. Like, so when people are like, oh, I don't like that, or that's not for me, I can't really judge that. I mean, if I get that, that's, I'm not intending it for a broader audience in any way at all.
So Luke, no one's asking for this type of breakdown from you. They just want to know what four bands could headline a festival that would get you the most excited right now. I mean, what the hell's wrong with you? What
but is like, this? Dude, what is... I don't need, I mean, it's hard to answer this question. It's like a weird way to pose. Like,
you're like, what I bands... like is not you're what like, other people I... like. We know
you're
that.
Like, well, you're like, which bands would you need to make you Lomo Saltado in your kitchen while someone else makes you a coffee? It's like, I don't need them for that. That doesn't solve right, me any kind
can,
of problems.
We can end the show. I guess if this is the direction. We're
hold going, on, I don't mean wow. to like, here I am stonewalling wow. the question. Like, okay, certainly you could do Metallica. I think that's a big festival band at this point, right? A headlining one, right?
This is for you. This is for you, the fan, that would get you the most excited. We're not, we don't care about anybody else. It's your festival. It's the Luke Thomas, Coachella, Bonnaroo, Woodstock, okay? It's Altamont. And guess what?
Okay.
You're the one
I just
that's
be
getting
clear.
Stabbed.
Nothing I'm going to say is going to draw 90,000 people. I just want to point that out, okay? In that event,
spirit of the question. That's not the spirit of the question, you weirdo. Pick the four bands you'd be so excited to see at a festival at once. What's wrong with you?
Pantera, obviously. Okay. That's a given. Pantera.
Okay, but they're not alive for the most part, right?
Yeah, they are. They're touring. I mean, two of them are. You know, it's a 50-50 proposition, you know?
Yeah.
What if them happened to get murdered on stage? You know,
hey,
it is
what
it
if
is.
Matt Brown just fills in for Dimebag, right? You
yeah, I'd be
that?
Sized. I'd go to that. Okay. Shit, yeah, okay. I go to that. Okay. All right, so there's that one. That's your easy win. That's your big-time win. Beyond that, fuck me, dude. I really don't know. I don't know.
Cannibal Corpse, maybe?
Dude, yeah, you could do that. They headline certain festivals, but, like, dude, that is a rough show, man. That's a rough show. That's, like, a tough fucking outing. That's hardcore sparring, you know? I'm trying to think, like, in my... Like, yeah, dude, I don't know. I don't know how to, I really don't know how to answer that question. I don't have that kind of relationship with
Looks
the music.
Like, to be fair, I don't really like music. That's why I'm a big metal fan. That's why,
is that it? Know, I'm a big metal it, fan because it. I don't actually like music.
Mikey is saying 1997 Lip Biscuit, so the venue just burns down around you. Maybe you're into
oh,
that.
Oh, you know maybe? Who I saw that was fucking great? Was Rage Against the Machine. They yeah. killed it. And I saw them at the 2000 HF Festival, so you can add them to the list. You know who else was great? System of a Down. They're not my favorite band by any stretch of the imagination. Here are just some bands I've seen that put on really good shows. How about that? System of a Down for another night. We can fly the Armenian flag.
Armenian time, yeah.
Yeah, let's and then it. Last but not least, it would not be the Wu-Tang Clan, because I saw them with Rage, and they were horrendous. You know what, BC?
What's that, because they're black, Luke? Is that what's going on here?
No, dude. There was 50,000 of them on stage talking over each other. They were all drunk and high. It was awful. Guns N' Roses. I'm not even a GNR guy, dude, and I've seen them now three times because of my wife. Dude, that show is just one of the best shows I've ever seen, just pound for pound. Amazing. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for fielding that question. We've got one more for you here. Thank you, Johnny from Tampa. Hopefully your Elvis and Robert Johnson and Beethoven concert works out great in your mind. Let's go to at Maiku Midioria. When was the last time either of you got into some sort of physical altercation with another person? What caused it and how did it end?
Fast time I got in. So we're not talking anything in the gym, right? Like, that's completely out, right?
Yeah, we're talking about like a schoolyard fight, a street fight, a bar fight. Like, when was the last time?
The last time, God, I can't even really. Jesus, dude, my 20s were filled with them. The last time I was in a physical altercation. What does shouting match count? Not really, right? Like, people getting in each other's face like that?
Yeah, when was the last time you were close to one then? What do you got? Shouting match with another
the
person?
The day after my wife gave birth, I had a, not a road rage incident, but I had a face-to-face with a guy.
Why?
Because he tried to cut me off by running a red.
Did you threaten to go third world on him?
I did not threaten to go third world, although that's the zing of all zings. I think it was when my buddy was between tours and was visiting me, and he got into a fight in a popular neighborhood called Adams Morgan and beat the living fuck out of a guy. And I had to pull him off and grab another friend who was fighting someone else. And we had to race out of there before the cops got there. So That was a bad one. That was one of those ones where I was like, I can't keep living my life this way. You know, I can't, there might've been another one past that.
Well, Luke, as an adult now, it's just not worth it unless somebody's putting hands on your family, right? I mean, you know, you don't want to get stabbed over an argument or a road rage incident or whatever, right? Or also, do you not agree?
Also, if someone could put hands, you know, someone could put hands on my brother, I'm like, am I really going to?
You're like somebody could not pay rent at my dad's rental property in Las Vegas, but I'm not getting down there and figuring it out for him. Yeah, I get you, yeah. Luke, I'm a lover. I'm not a fighter. I don't get into fist fights, Luke. I mean, I've thrown a drunken punch or two, not connecting, didn't go anywhere. I've certainly been punched at certain times in my life when I've deserved it. But yeah, I don't have great stories for you, Luke. I don't have the bar brawls that you were a part of in your life. You know, BC, I didn't go away to college.
I'm not going to read this, but there is a request from Mikey to tell a particular story. Would you tell that particular story?
Oh, pickup basketball, he wants to know. So I've gotten people close to throwing punches at me in pickup basketball, and I was prepared for the reality of it, but you know, it didn't escalate further. I mean, look, that's how I compete. I'm not afraid to get people to the point of losing their shit if I feel them losing their shit will give me some type of advantage that I don't have because I can't jump and I'm not quick and I really can't shoot. And I'm really not all that skilled, Luke, but I'm a smart passer. I'm a great pick setter. I can rebound the shit out of things. And you know, at the end of the day, Luke, I've played a lot of basketball against people that are better than me. And sometimes being, as Mikey just said, being a mental warrior is my one up. I mean, to me, I've always believed what happens in between the lines on a court, whether it's your best friends or people you've never met, it stays there, dude, right? It stays there.
It should, but it never does. There's so many fights on the fucking YMCA basketball courts of old guys tearing their ACLs and trying to fist fight. It's the saddest shit on earth.
The last time I was close or at least prepared for one was probably about 10 years ago. I was moving out of an apartment. And my kids were really small, and I was, I had to break the lease to get out because it wasn't a good situation. We needed to go somewhere different. And the neighbors were crazy. It was whatever. But the neighbors, Luke, were related to the landlord. So when the landlord came to like inspect it, he started accusing me of breaking things that I didn't to try to like add money on the situation. And then he started to act tough. So the dude's like 55, but he was big and jacked. And he owned like a factory. And he was like this, he was from another country, Luke. I mean, he was this Polish dude who was ready to go if necessary. And we got into an argument over the money and over the accusations, which were untrue, of things he said I broke. And he started to mouth off about my wife randomly. And I stepped forward and got into his face and said, this will be the last time you'll mention my wife's name. And Luke, I balled up the fist with the right hand. Now he was older than me, but he was a lot bigger and stronger than me. And I was just thinking, if he throws the right hand, I'm going to slip it, hit him once, and then see what happens next. Luke, what do you think would have happened?
You would have broken your wrist throwing that horrendous punch you had.
I don't think so. I don't, this was like 2010. So that's a lot younger B. That's like 32-year-old BC. Okay. Well, look, maybe. I figured out quickly he was right-handed. I bet you I could have slipped that with ease and countered him quick. And then I was ready to go to the ground if I had to. But that was probably the last time I got in somebody's face and said to myself, this could go south, but I'm ready for it, Luke. Okay.
I haven't had one of those in a long time.
I was fighting for my family's honor, Luke. All right.
Also, because, you know, you're destined for jail one way or the other, aren't you?
No. I try to do right by people for the most part. Except
jail is terrifying, is it not? It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Like the prospect of spending your life there, it's like, wow, I really don't want to do that. That seems awful.
I mean, the prospect of spending one night there, Luke, has been usually enough for me to not enter into those territories. Although, you know, we've all done some dumb shit that we probably should have gotten caught for and have our lives ruined. I mean, look, when you look back for all like your dumbest shit, you're so lucky you didn't get handled and then like it was put in the local newspaper and then you're just scarlet lettered the rest of your life, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. There was one time I was using marijuana in a park at night, because this was a long time ago. And I think I'd been on the Marine Corps maybe like a year or two or something like that. And cops rolled up on me, and they didn't arrest me, but they detained me. And they were like, what are you doing here? I was like, smoking weed. And they're like, okay, can you go smoke weed in a different park? And I was like, why? They're like, so we're an anti-gang unit, and this is where the gangs hang out, and we're waiting to catch one of them. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to go now. They're like, what the fuck? Yeah. They asked me, they're like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, yeah, that's a good point. I'm probably not going to make this mistake anymore.
I was at a fish concert in like Vermont or something. Where was I? And a guy next to me was smoking hash, Luke, which I guess by the technical definition, you can get charged with like heroin possession if you get caught with that, right?
I'm not sure how that works, but it is different than weed. Yeah.
It is different. And he threw it under the car as they approached and searched us. And I felt like that was a bullet dodging right there. That was a big moment. That was a big bullet dodging, right?
Dude, I picked up my friend after he got a DUI. I had to bail him out of jail and I picked him up. And then when he got in the car, he was all sad and quiet. And I was like, Do you need a ride to the liquor store now? Woo! Gotcha, bitch.
Yeah. That's that's Georgia for you, Luke.
Virginia. That was Virginia.
Oh yeah. Virginia's for lovers, Luke, and that's what I am. Thank you. Yeah, that's the
like the clip said, Virginia is for lovers, but trust this hate here for out of towners. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. Luke, you're one of my you're not even from Virginia, you're from India. I'm sorry, Luke. That went nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah, you brought your A material. You had all of the enthusiasm of a 19-year-old tasked with accompanying his father on a Titanic submarine expedition, you know.
Hey Dad, can we stop at Burger King on the way home, please? Yeah. There you go. I mean,
the food in London and Tokyo is inedible. We got to go to Burger King.
Yeah. Look, people perished in that. So did Dale Jr. on turn four. So maybe we can show some respect all these years later.
Listen, right? They died painless deaths. May we all be so lucky in that sense. Anyway.
Yeah, I hope to die in my sleep like a real man does, Luke. That's the best way you can do it.
Dude, you're going to die on like a fucking backyard barbecue. Someone's going to run over you with a four-wheeler or some shit.
Well, I always felt I was destined for an Elvis exit, Luke, on the throne. Just fall over on the throne, pantsless.
No, dude, you're going to be so much worse. You're going to fall off of your roof and like impale yourself on some kind of garden gnome in the front yard, you know?
This may not surprise you, Luke, but I've fallen off of a ladder 3 times since I've owned this house. And I've owned this house for 6 years. And the guy that lived here before me left behind a really monstrously big ladder, but the base of it that hit that you foot on the ground was like broken and off angles. And, you know, I would still like an idiot go out there and clean the gutters with the thing like, you know, swaying and barely. And look, I've taken some like 20-foot falls off of that. I'm not proud of that.
Yeah, that's less than ideal. We should go now, though.
All right. I don't want to do this anymore. Thank you, Mike Mormile, for being our spirit guide on this.
Bang, bang.
Luke Thomas, your boy, BC, America, guys, right? We're almost 200 years old, right? Or 300. Where are we at? How old's America, Luke?
Yes, almost 200, BC. That's exactly right.
That's where it's at. I think yeah. All right. Thank you. Would you have any thing to say to all of our international guests who are like, what is this July 4th bullshit?
Yeah, that's your cue. That's your cue, BC. Can we end it now?
Am I on fire? All right, Luke, we got to go. I got to figure out why this house is on fire. Talk to you later.
Bye.